step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to episode 64 of Talk Eastern Europe, a podcast dedicated to discussing all things related to Central and Eastern Europe and the official podcast of the New Eastern Europe magazine. This podcast is a listener-supported podcast, and our patrons donate to us via our special Patreon page, for which we are extremely grateful. And all of our patrons receive additional benefits for supporting the podcast. So if you enjoy listening to the Talk Eastern Europe podcast and want even more, please support us at www.patreon.com/talkeasterneurope. Make sure to listen to the end of this episode for our traditional Patreon shout-out. My name is Adam Reichert, and with me is the other co-host of Talk Eastern Europe, Maciek Makulski. Hi, Maciek.
Hey, Adam. Hello, listeners. Thank you for joining us. Each week, we bring you an in-depth discussion on a certain topic related to our region. This week, we are looking at Moldova and the new president of this country and the turbulent situation there. As a reminder, the podcast is a member of the Europod Network, a network of European podcasts that covers various views on political and social trends in Europe and beyond.
Well, as always, we have a lot of ground to cover. We are here recording in the studio in Warsaw, and we have a guest with us, so let's get started. And we are back now here in the studio in Warsaw with our guest, Octavian Milewski, someone who is a familiar voice to our listeners at Talk Eastern Europe, an expert on Moldovan affairs based here in Warsaw. Octavian, welcome back to the podcast. Great to have you here.
Hi, Adam. Good to find you here. And hi, Maciek. It's my first time here in the studio, and it's cozy here. Congrats.
Thank you. Thank you, Octavian. It's good to have you back. It was already quite a while when we have you at Talk Eastern Europe, so I think it's high time to talk more about Moldova, which is one of our favorite countries to discuss at Talk Eastern Europe.
Yes.
Favorite for you, painful for me, in a way.
Well, what's interesting is that since the last time you've been here, a lot has happened, so I think we have a lot to cover, and we'll try to cover as much as we can. But I want to start with looking at Maia Sandu's foreign policy approach, because this has been visible to observers outside Moldova, quite visible, I think. And I want to start with a quote from a text that you wrote back for New Eastern Europe in December, where you said that there is one aspect of Sandu's presidency that will likely change the status quo, and that the new president hopes to restore Moldova's external relations with its two geographical neighbors, Romania and Ukraine, and that she's expected to reset the bilateral and maybe even multilateral agenda for these states. So Let's start with that. How do you assess the situation now? Has she managed to make progress on these issues? And what are her main goals when we look at kind of the regional policy of Maia Sandu's presidency?
Look, she was invested on December 24th. So she's in office for less than 2 months, in fact. We usually start with drawing any conclusions in general at 100 days. It's like a sacral number. So it's too early to say that, just for me, it's too early to draw any conclusion. But I must say that in these 2 months, she's had four significant foreign policy events. Mm-hmm. She's been behind these events, and all of them were successful. Given her prerogatives and her limited resources in terms of executive powers And I could say even in human resources that she disposes of, then she's been a great success from this point of view. First of all, she was paid a visit. That was the very first foreign policy event by the Romanian president on December 30th. So that's less than 1 week after she was invested. And that was the first significant event that marked the exit from this isolation into which Dodon pushed Moldova for 4 years. Mm. Not only Dodon, but Dodon played the last chapter in all this story. Then, and we can maybe further elaborate on this visit. Then she had her real foreign external visit to Kyiv,
yeah,
where she restarted the relations because they were totally frozen. That was the lowest point of Ukrainian relations since independence for basically 29 or 30 years. Then she had a visit to Paris and also a visit to Brussels. So basically four moments in less than 2 months, that's significant to say the least.
Quite a bit, yeah.
Yep. And she showed a different face for somebody who has prerogatives in foreign policy from the Moldovan point of view. She set a certain direction, an agenda. She tried to mend fences with the neighbors, with Romania, where no summit-level contact has been for 6 years. Between the two countries, so brotherly countries, you know, and so on, and neighbors, but no contact. And then Kyiv. Kyiv was very important because she, the agenda is really very heavy between the two countries. There are huge dossiers in the bilateral relations, and she opened this track. She set a bilateral, she and Zelensky started and established a presidential council. There are working groups and they started working. We don't know too much. This is a behind the scenes work at the advisors levels, level at the level of experts. But an agenda is being built for hopefully when a government, a real government, will be in place in Chisinau. So that's a success compared to the scorched earth she inherited from Dodon in foreign policy.
If I may follow up, she's been very active, as you mentioned, but one place that she hasn't gone to was Moscow. Is there any talk about her going in that direction, or has she been focused on immediate neighbors and West?
West, first and foremost, this is, in my view, the first genuine, most pro-Western president Moldova has had since independence. Mm. I don't want to be, to sing eulogies to her.
Right.
And I'm not actually very optimistic about Moldova in general. It's a country which is in a very bad place right now. But she was concerned with, and her visit to Paris showed that. She might have, she also is to hopefully soon visit Berlin. And Brussels will be always on her agenda as often as possible, given the pandemics. As concerns Moscow, she's been very careful not to alienate, not to play on this. Let's bash Russia to display myself as a West's imagined president or something like that. No, she's been very careful. But relations with Moscow are much more complex, and obviously Moscow was not happy at all with her winning the presidential elections, the defeat of Dodon, respectively. The agenda is complicated, difficult, long, and it's full of problems and mines, so to speak, and traps. She's very careful on it. There might be a visit. We don't know when, but she's open to it.
Mm-hmm.
And one more point. I haven't seen significant hostility, aside from a few moments, sustained hostility from Moscow so far. But Moscow obviously is busy. It has a much wider agenda always.
She visited also
Brussels. She met with Ursula von der Leyen and, as far as I know, with the president of the European Parliament, probably. Would you include also that in as her foreign policy success so far? Like, and if yes, then maybe what she managed to gain from this visit, if anything.
First of all, she started shaking hands in Brussels again. A president, Moldovan president, doesn't bash and has play this good guy, bad guy, you know, whereby Moscow is the example for us to follow, while Brussels is having this decadent agenda, because Dodon, as much as he can intellectually do that, was always trying to play this, to oppose mm-hmm. the two sides, than to work with them. Obviously, Maya Sandu is not that kind of president. She did meet basically everyone she should have met in Brussels, also with Johannes Hahn, also with the leaders of the popular European Popular Party, Tusk, everyone that she has to meet, and she spent there basically 2 days. The agenda with EU is now obviously conditioned by Moldova's capacity to deliver on any chapter that the parts have. And Moldova is not capable. Here we cannot draw a line between the domestic policy and the external policy of Moldova. She did obtain promise of relief, of humanitarian relief related to pandemics, and Moldova has received actually a few days ago a grant of 15 million euro, which is important for out of this fighting pandemic relief. And that's basically due to her visit, due to her good relations, due to her openness, and so on. And that's important. So
it's a clear success.
From the point of view of any, I would say, Moldovan who cares about their country as a success, this is a bit humiliating, because we see Moldova begging, receiving relief from everywhere, and Europe is its main donor. You know, the country is not capable to sustain itself. Yesterday, Moldova received a convoy from Romania, reached Chisinau and brought anti-suits and so on. Basics. Also, Czech Republic delivers a comparable amount. So this is how Moldova survives. And this is not the first, by the way, tranche of humanitarian help that receives. And Europe is behind this. Also, Moldova is to receive through Romania. So we cannot here separate Romania from the EU, a number of 200,000 doses of vaccine.
Hmm. If I may jump here, and one more question about that, because I think I understand your point, but this pandemic crisis is the one which is difficult not only for countries who are less developed, but also for richer countries, and also countries from Western Europe needed last year some help from other countries. So I think I understand your criticism, because there is a lot of things that do not work properly in Moldova, but of course Moldova deserves help and our attention. So I would like also to look at this from that kind of perspective, that this is something I think I would like to see it like that countries simply support each other, and then Moldova, of course, should be included in all European Union's programs helping at fighting this crisis. Yeah. I think also we will maybe come back to the issue of pandemic in the later part of our conversation. Yeah. But we also would like to ask you about some domestic policy issues in Moldova, which we didn't plan
before, but as Adam already started, Moldova is that country which a lot of things happened since we talked about that country last time. So, Adam, you can start if you like.
Sure. Maybe we could look at the effect of Sandu's election victory on domestic politics, because from what I understand, and you can please clarify me because it's been hard to follow, but the government that was in power had fallen, I think. There weren't new elections. Maya Sandu appointed one of her people to a prime minister post, and she was not accepted. And now there's a lot of confusion on whether there's going to be new elections or not. So maybe you could bring us up to speed a little bit on what has happened in these last 2 months. Seems to be pretty turbulent in terms of domestic politics.
Adam, indeed, we were starting to speak before we started to record that foreign policy here is secondary in a way,
mm-hmm.
because its success, first of all, is long term. Mm-hmm. We will see it long term if mm-hmm. it works the way Sandu and her party, or those parties who back them, will succeed. But then Moldova's foreign policy, just as any normal foreign policy, is dependent on the success or the ongoing domestic process.
Right.
And here, indeed, there was Moldova is in some sort of crisis. Mm. Surely not some sort, but surely crisis. But it's a crisis of appointment. It's a political crisis. I'm not touching on sanitary and economic crisis. But here we have a nomination crisis of the prime minister. It's because of unclear prerogatives of the president. And they were constantly skewed, changed through interventions of previous suits, I would say, of the constitutional court members. Just to be more coherent, what's happened is that on one of the last days, 28th December.
Okay.
Former Prime Minister Kiku left.
Yeah.
He resigned, and he just didn't only resign, he left totally. He should have remained in office just to fulfill all those duties according to the constitution, but he left totally. And with him, there were also a number of ministers, and even more so, even the second level of high dignitaries, so to speak, left. So
there was kind of an abandonment of power almost.
Exactly. Yeah. There was this vacuum.
Yeah.
And she had to immediately
react
and to feel it somehow. So it ended into the situation when the former and still executing his powers foreign minister became the replacement. He's replaced the prime. He's the prime minister in act.
Like acting.
Aurelio Ciocoi.
Yeah.
That's the prime minister currently. Okay. And he's never been elected. He's not a politician. He's been formerly ambassador to U.S., Germany. Hmm. But
he's just in a caretaker role at the moment.
He's a diplomat.
Yeah.
He's not, you know, you cannot, he's not even a technocratic prime minister.
Octavian, but it was a government of social democrats, right?
Can I say oligarchs? And if oligarchy is compatible with social democracy.
Yeah, my point was
or
like...
Or socialism in general.
Okay, but my point was what I wanted to know for sure, who was really responsible to like fulfill this vacuum that that appeared after the previous prime minister, as you said, left the room.
they simply wiped off the ground, you know, so they left a vacuum behind. So they indeed found replacements and there were appointments and they're always in act. They're ad interim.
Right,
they're,
right.
Acting until a full-fledged government will be elected. But then starts the next stage, the appointment stage. She found one of her... Look, the idea is and I should have started with this. Let's forward back a bit. Her strategy is to have a total change of the composition of the parliament. So that means early parliamentary elections. That's her strategy.
Yeah.
That's the big strategy that she even campaigned on and with. So she said from the very beginning, I want you out. And they played this in a way. Kiku and the social socialists, and the so-called Democrats and the this party, which is, you cannot even call it a party. It's a what Moldovans call OPG. It's a Russian abbreviation which stands for organized criminality. And
the biggest party in the parliament is the...
Is the Socialist Party of Dodon.
Okay.
He's back as president.
The parliament.
Yeah, and they said, okay, you want early parliamentary elections, let's try to do it. So we take our people out, so let's see how you will do it.
Mm.
Only that they started to sabotage her from the very beginning. Mm. And so while she wants a total change of this generation Plakhotniuk,
yeah,
they started to sabotage her because she's very popular. She's the most popular president ever to be elected in Moldova. She had basically 1 million Moldovans voted for her, which is unprecedented. Wow. And she started with this from the very beginning. I want you out. We need early parliamentary elections. We need to bring new parties, reform-minded people, a new generation of politicians.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Obviously, there is a huge resistance from the system. And in the parliament, she can benefit only from direct support in this process from 15 MPs out of 101. So this is a minority.
Yeah.
Like, so visible. 15 from her party of Action and Solidarity. And also, eventually, 11, 12 MPs from this PPDA, the platform party of Truth and Dreptate and Shadavar and
so these two
parties
create this vacuum block, right?
No, these two parties are those who could back Maya Sandu or support Maya Sandu in her strategy, while two-thirds of the parliament, more than actually two-thirds, are against it. And they sabotaged her. So now the next stage is that she has to constitutionally appoint a prime minister, which would propose a cabinet, then the cabinet would be invested, only that she doesn't need this. She wants this not to happen. Uh-huh. She technically has to do it, only that she vows for not this cabinet not being voted. She needs to fail twice. This cabinet should not be voted twice. Then this would
trigger
the process, which would bring to new elections. Uh-huh. So this process would last 130, 150, 60 days. So probably by June there would be general and early parliamentary elections.
Mm-hmm.
Only that none of those MPs, that's those parties, this oligarchic alliance in the parliament, is willing to do so. They want to go till the end because these people are simple accidental people in Moldovan politics, the great majority of them. They were brought to that point by the system of Plahotniuc, which he built, you know, previously. We talked about it, probably, and not only me, and many others are talking about it. So this is the contradiction of Moldovan politics. She needs a government, but she needs a true government, not a fake government. While these guys now, I mean, these socialists plus short party plus strange structure steered by Plahotniuc from Turkey, he's hiding in Turkey.
But he still has influence.
He has a strong influence.
Really? Okay.
Even if he's left, his system is still in place.
Wow.
He's not visible, but you know he's lurking there in darkness and in the gray area. There are this short party, which is also a creature of Plahotniuc in the end. Mm-hmm. This is one of those executives who stole the famous billion from the Moldova National Bank in 2014. So she is now, we are now in the moment when first, the first nomination failed. So zero votes. we are talking about Gavrilica, Natalia Gavrilica, and she's a close associate of Maia Sandu. Also Harvard, which is very important for Moldovan politics, a Harvard graduate, I think Kennedy School of Governance. Uh-huh. So
she was appointed to form a government.
To form a government, but to fail it, to fail to be elected.
Okay.
Only that.
So the strategy was that she shouldn't be successful.
She shouldn't be exact. Only that, after this first vote failed, the socialists, together with Shore Party and with Pro-Moldova Party, which is party of Andrian Candu, godson of Plahotniuc, directly. There is a very specific institution in Moldova, Moldovan society, of godsons, godfathers, godmothers, godchildren, and god everything. And this guy plus a few, they organized a list of 54, so more than 51, more than half of the MPs, 54, a group of 54 backing, supporting MPs for a different nomination.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to go to 2016 now to say that in 2016 there was another appointment crisis, which was decided by the Constitutional Court, which was also, back then, was a second pocket parliament of Plahotniuc.
Right.
And back then, the Constitutional Court ruled that if there is a formalized majority of MPs, of more than 51 MPs nominating a prime minister, then the president is obliged to appoint, even if the president doesn't like it, doesn't want it, it's not in her plan or it's not on her agenda, she has to. She's obliged constitutionally to do it. But this time, after the failure of the first appointment of Gavrilica, they immediately came with this proposal. 54 MPs. So technically, Maia Sandu has to take into account this person totally unknown to the Moldovan politics. I'm running through so many names now that I need to focus a few seconds to recall her name.
But anyway, this candidate will be voted, yeah?
No, they immediately, Maia Sandu, not Maia Sandu, but members of PAS, of Party of Action and Solidarity, contested this at the Constitutional Court. So now we're waiting, actually, on February 23rd, we are waiting for the decision of the Constitutional Court, which will confirm or reject this nomination. So basically, the process is suspended. I know it's complicated. You need time to understand it. The process of nomination for the second time of Gavrilica is suspended, while there is also a decision to be taken on whether this appointment of this oligarchic alliance is constitutional. And if yes, if on 23rd the Constitutional Court rules that this was a legitimate action, political action, then Maia Sandu has to take it into account, and she would formally nominate this person for forming a new cabinet, a new executive. And automatically, the Gavrilica nomination is null and void. And we're waiting for this 23rd. We don't know what the Constitutional Court will say. We simply don't.
There's no speculation.
There is always. There are scenarios. If the Constitutional Court says that nomination, God, I'm having issues with recalling Mariana Durleșteanu.
Okay,
that's her name,
and she's completely unknown before. I mean.
She's known only in banking, in corporate, whatever corporate system is there in Moldova, but she's not known as a politician.
Right.
So, what are her chances?
Her chances, I don't know.
Try to get this episode up before the 23rd, because we are recording today on the 20th, our listeners know.
I can tell you that there is a chance that this will not be her nomination, will be invalidated, because that was not a formalized alliance of 54. So Gavrilița would have to be to run through a second vote. And here is the absurd of the Moldovan politics. She might be elected this time, or invested, not elected, mm-hmm. invested as prime minister.
Gavrilița.
Okay. Not by her party supporters, because they don't want, in fact, her prime minister, but by her enemies, opponents.
Just to avoid
snap elections. Exactly.
Okay. Exactly. Let's. I really have a feeling that we need to try to sum up this somehow.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling that our listeners now understand why we so often talk about Moldova, because, you know, we cannot do a break for a year, because it would be too difficult then to catch up. Octavian, I think that is super clear why Maia Sandu prefers the option in which
snow is falling, just in case.
If you hear that crash in the background, it's snow is falling off the roofs and the old buildings here in Warsaw.
Yeah, that's what the conditions are here. Again, I understand why Maia Sandu wants not to have this new government, because it brings her closer to the snap elections and complete reshufflement of the political scene. And just to confirm it or not, the opponents of Maia Sandu, socialists, Dodon especially, what is better for them? They would like to keep her till June with this unclear situation, with not having, in fact, a government or effective government, which means in terms of during the pandemic, like a really, really hard situation. You cannot govern a country properly. Or to have installed their own, let's say, candidate as a prime minister, let's try to sum up this part. Yeah,
we can build scenarios and we can speculate at this point, but I think there is that if this Gavrilița scenario works and she's invested by her opponents, in fact, their agenda is to sabotage her with any possible means, with every possible means, and in this way to strike into this popularity of Maia Sandu, which automatically transfers to the her former party. She, as a president, she cannot rule through. I mean, she cannot be member of any party. So that's the erosion. That's their agenda. Erode them, because in case, I don't know, next Sunday there is elections in Moldova, then her party, the president's party or supporting party, would receive around 40%. It would become the biggest party in the parliament. Then it would be followed by the socialists, the pro-Dodon, pro-oligarchy party. Also, social, they would get around probably 30 MPs or seats in the parliament, and two more parties would follow. A short party with probably 10 to 15 MPs, and also there would be a significant number might reach of MPs could reach parliament from our party of Renato Usatăi.
Mm-hmm.
This is an extra parliamentary party now of a person which is quite pro-Russian. Not quite a outright pro-Russian mayor of the city of Belts, northern second biggest city of Moldova, if we don't count Tiraspol as Moldova, and quite I don't want to use the word charismatic because he's not charismatic, but he's popular for the Moldovan, a part of Moldovan mindset.
You said he's very pro-Russian, but in fact, the Kremlin is not very pro him, as far as I understand.
Because Dodon has monopolized his segment so far.
Dodon, the Kremlin bets on Dodon.
Yeah, but that's not enough. Mm-hmm. I mean, we never know.
Right.
I mean, we just if you want, I can open some brackets and very fast tell you that people of Plakhotniuk have recently stayed in Moscow, like some sort of emissaries of Plakhotniuk, which is so despised in Moscow, right? Mm-hmm. Have spent as emissaries time in Moscow, probably negotiating something behind the scenes with Dodon and with people from Kremlin. There is a lot of engineering behind. I don't want to sound conspiracy-like or, you know, but there is always, and this guy has had his business in Russia. He has a huge house in close to Moscow or in Moscow. I'm not sure. He's openly anti-NATO. And he's a huge friend of Vladimir Zhirinovsky.
Right.
I mean, do you need more evidence?
That's, I think, explains everything.
But he also has one strong side at this point. He's very, at least verbally, he's very anti-corruption. Although he himself, you could suspect him of very shady deals in his past, criminal-like and so on. So I'm closing this bracket. And let's go to back to what you, Maciek, asked is, and here we would, they would play on probably two.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Scenarios. Sabotaging a would-be Gavrilidze cabinet. This would not be so hard to do because we are in an economic crisis. We have the pandemics. Moldova is constantly in a demographic crisis. We know why, because, you know, every third Moldovan is not even third, maybe more than that, outside. They're forming the diaspora. And we don't know what other negative surprises are there. So they would bring down this popularity for sure. They could succeed. After which they could depose a censure motion and bring down the cabinet and then start again another process to nominate another cabinet. And this can go on create this chaos in Moldovan politics, which is very, very possible. And this chaos...
This could last for 2 years because the next election is 2023, right?
Exactly. And it's very difficult to really make... You can make scenarios, but they are so fragile. You can have something happening next week or the other week and it's over. You have to restart your scenario making, you know. Yeah. This is why... but their concern is to slash from this popularity of Maia Sandu, strike this and affect this popularity of Action and Solidarity, and then if they are if that meets their interests, indeed have early elections in autumn. But this is not the strongest or most solid scenario.
Mm-hmm.
This muddling through this chaos can be prolonged until next winter, to say the least.
Well, so
this is fascinating.
Yes,
the time is running out fast. So, but maybe I will ask you a very quick question about that. Maybe, and maybe with that we will close this part.
Sounds good.
Because you said that there are people in the system, within the system, for instance, in the parliament, who are, let's call them, like products of the all these oligarchic system, which are...
I call them Plakhotniuk generation.
Okay, Plakhotniuk generation. So they are in politics because this was a part of the system. Yeah, so they... To some extent, they are not such a true politicians who are in politics because they want to be politicians. So can you imagine that situation if Maya Sandu managed somehow to really, really achieve this situation when we have snap elections or next parliamentary elections, that some of these people simply withdraw from politics because there will be not enough room for them, even from the perspective of opponents of Maya Sandu? Or it's still like too strong structure, this oligarchic structure? You said that Plakhotniuk is still there, somewhere there in the shadow. So what, how do you see that?
First of all, Plakhotniuk is not as powerful, but he's powerful enough and he can make this alliance with Dodon, with Kandu, with... I can bring other names of his emissaries and they are so active and not necessarily in the first line of sure, Ilan Shor, this is such a anti-hero totally in Moldovan politics, but he's very, very efficient. As a destructive power, and he's legitimate because he can collect votes. But okay, he can have this oligarchic alliance, which is still very strong, and which is at least at this point in the parliament represents at least two thirds of the number of MPs. But Maciek, you were asking about bringing new and. Okay, let's just try to imagine what happens after possible early parliamentary elections take place. According to the opinion polls that we are having now, these last weeks and months, there would be no dominating force in parliament. There would be four parties, most probably. And indeed, many of those generation Plakhotniuk would be out, including this Democratic Party, which is one of the, if not the longest surviving party so far in Moldova. So they would disappear eventually. But let's say supposedly Maya or the PAS pro-European forces would get 40 MPs, around 40 MPs in the parliament, while a similar number would be of from even slightly bigger of those who are from Shore and Socialist, Dodon's party. And then there is this fourth force, which is pro-Russian, but also you cannot deny it, I mean, this our party of Renato Usatai, you cannot deny it, this reformist agenda, at least according to the narrative that they're having now. So so this is the only force that they could eventually ally with and build something, provided that the true face that we are afraid of, this pro-Russian face of Renato Usatai, doesn't become yet another negative force of or something which is opposed of force for good, right? Which is this dark side of always, which is so present always in Moldovan politics. You always have destructive characters there. So, but you are obliged to try it. Maya Sandu has no other option now. Of course, she is technically one of the weakest pillars of state institutions. The constitution doesn't give her too many prerogatives, but she is also part of this very characteristic Moldovan system of strong informal institutions,
and her popularity.
Yeah, exactly.
Gives her
She's having this huge popularity, and that gives her legitimacy. Technically, she shouldn't be doing this, but she can do this. Nobody prohibits her to do this, and she's trying to use whatever means she has at her disposal. She's also tried in January to invest with more power this Security Council that she has at her disposal, which is formed, and she extended it and brought a lot of civil society into it. Only that this body doesn't have strong executive powers. It has powers of which significantly boost popularity or visibility of certain of the agenda. But
okay, it doesn't powers. Have political power, but it still empowered some people who sees the future of Moldova differently, than oligarchy system and so on.
She is trying basically to start a process of total change of politicians. Yeah. To bring a new generation in Moldovan politics, which is so hard to do because the resistance is still huge, very powerful. And the main vehicle for this change would come from would result from early parliamentary elections, hopefully. Hmm. You cannot foresee what will happen.
Of course. As we've been discussing, I think, this whole time, it's definitely something worth watching, and we will be watching it closely. And we are very grateful, Octavian, that you're here with us to share with our listeners what is happening in Moldova. You know, it's such a small country, but yet such an important one that we definitely keep it on our radar all the time. Octavian, thanks for joining us in here in the studio in Warsaw. Very glad.
Maciek, thank you for inviting me. Good luck.
Yeah, we'll see you soon, I'm sure. Thanks.
That was our interview with Octavian Milewski about current situation in Moldova. It's really difficult to sum it up somehow because, as you could hear, Octavian rather guaranteed himself that he will visit us again and explain how the situation unfolds. This is huge political crisis, I think we should use that word, in Moldova, but also with a kind of a hope, which we didn't have last year. I don't know, Adam, what you think about that. If you have any comments to this episode, also feel free to share your comments on our Facebook group or any other way you like. And I think we will simply move to our third and traditional part of each episode. Or, Adam, if you like to say something more about the interview.
I think a lot was covered in the interview, so maybe we can move on to our announcements. Just the last thought for me is just that it's so complicated and so much happening in Moldova, and this is a country that really not very many people outside the country is paying attention to. So I'm glad that you're with us in Talk Eastern Europe, and you have a chance to learn more about this country. We do see it. It's in our philosophy at New Eastern Europe and Talk Eastern Europe to see Moldova as a critical country, because not only because the Moldovans are an important neighbor of Europe and important part of Europe, let's say, but also the fact that Moldovans are in Europe. I mean, most Moldovans actually live outside the country, and it's important that...
Not only in Europe, but...
Yeah, true, yeah, around the world, but U.S. as well. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's a big, big, important part. So we'll leave it at that for the moment. We are watching it carefully, and we will see which way it goes. Maciek, the first thing I want to say in closing out the episode is that we met our goal. I think the last episode we recorded, we had expressed that our goal was to reach 30 patrons before the end of winter. And right now we're in Warsaw and the snow is melting, as you probably heard during the interview. It's crashing on the street, falling off the buildings. So winter may be coming to an end, though I'm not going to predict that just yet. But the good news is that we've already reached our goal, and we are now at 31 patrons. But that doesn't mean that we are not inviting others to join. That we are very happy to have our patrons with us.
And we are saying hello to new patrons.
And we say hello to new patrons. And I also want to mention for our patrons and for those who are potential patrons, we also have extra benefits. And one of them was just recently we had an online Zoom meeting with a Hungarian journalist, a very interesting discussion about the situation in Hungary, and it was available only for our Patreon patrons and allow them to also to listen and to speak and to ask questions themselves. And if you missed it, if you're a patron, you can still see that in the Patreon page when you log in. So that means basically, Maciek, that not only do you support our podcast, but you get extra benefits and engage and get directly opportunities to directly speak with experts and journalists and activists from the region. And we will continue to be organizing these as well.
And one of our privilege in each episode is to do a traditional shout out of our patrons. And Adam, I think, is the perfect time to do that.
It is, and I have it all queued up. So I do want to say hello and thank you to especially our newest patrons, but to all of our patrons. We have Marina, we have CB, Joseph, Pat, Klaus, Plamen, Sean, Amy, Naomi, Sylvia, JP, Elise, Nina, Sean, David, Anastasia, William, Pavel, Urs, Ian, Sophia, Scapeghost, Wilhelm, David, Elizabeth, Erica, Janos, Jason, Mark, Stephanie, and Pierre. Thank you so much for your support of the podcast, and we really enjoy engaging with you. And again, encourage others who are listening. If you like Talk Eastern Europe, please support us.
And I think that's it for today. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, everybody, and we will be back soon with another episode.
Bye-bye.
Bye.